Hello, hello. Welcome back, everybody, for episode 2 of This Liminal Life. It's a weekly podcast where my wife and I talk about the trials and the struggles of life in this liminal state. My name is Brian Holt, and here with me in our studio bedroom is my wife, Rebecca.
Good evening.
Yep, this is a Friday night. We're recording this after our daughter's 8th birthday party. We had some kids over, had a good time with them, and things kind of settled down, and now it's getting late, but really wanted to record this podcast on a Friday so we can edit it and get it up online on Monday. So a couple of things happened this week. We actually got the authorization and stuff. I submitted the podcast to iTunes, and so now you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. And if you search This Liminal Life, you'll be able to find that. And so I got that up going this week. I also got my sermons up for download as well for our church, Emmaus Christian Church. You can search This Liminal State podcast to get the sermons from Emmaus Christian Church. So what's going on, Rebecca? How's your week been?
It's been a good week. It's been a really busy week. I'm tired, but we just had a lot going on. We were a bunch of moms, and I were laughing the other day that when someone asks us, "How you doing? How's your week been?" We know it's been crazy, but sometimes we can't remember a thing that we've actually done, and I just think that's how crazy it is.
Well, that's fun. So what? Tell us about this birthday that you had. You did a really good job on all the stuff that they did.
Well, Chloe is our third child. She's our first girl. Her name is Chloe Hope, and I love her name because Chloe means blossoming, and so you put the two together and you get blossoming hope. And the Lord gave me that name at a time when I think needed hope. So her name has always spoken to me, but she is turning 8. She actually isn't officially 8 yet, but this was the best time for a birthday party. And we were trying to make a decision about whether or not she should just have one friend over or invite a bunch of her friends. And, you know, I'm sure every family sort of has their dilemma about what to do with, you know, their kids for their birthdays. So we ended up allowing her to invite several of her really good friends over, and it was a wonderful time. The girls were great, and we did a craft. We actually made homemade lavender bath salts, and so a really good friend of ours came and helped with the craft, and the girls took home a really pretty jar, and we had put a scripture on the outside of the jar about how we're the fragrance of Christ and the aroma of Christ to those who are being saved, and just, you know, something to remind the girls when they sit in the bathtub and scrub away.
Something very distinctly girl.
Yes.
No doubt.
No, the boys were gagging. They couldn't stand the lavender smell. So anyway, it was great. I mean, the girls had a good time. I mean, they were into dress-up clothes. They raided the dress-up bin, and there was a show for us, and they came down and all kinds of stuff, and it was just fun. It was sweet.
That's cool. One thing I wanted to share is, before we got too far into this, is I realized that now on the podcast and on my sermons and on my website, it says This Liminal State, and the podcast is called This Liminal Life, and we haven't explained what that means yet, and so I thought maybe I'd explain that real quick. A liminal is an anthropology term, and I'm not an anthropologist, so don't hold me to a, you know, strict book definition, but I did learn this in college, which was a long time ago. But a liminal state is what's called you're in between something. So you're not quite in one room, you're not in the other room, you're in the threshold. Some people call it a betwixt and between state. So there's liminal periods in architecture when one period of architecture is going out, another period is coming in, and that's called a liminal period or a liminal state. You're not quite one, you're not yet the next thing, but you're in between. And so with how that relates to our lives as Christians, we are already Christians. We are already forgiven. We have life. Our life eternal has begun when we accept Christ as our Lord and when we yield our lives to Him and when He regenerates us and saves us. That's when we begin our life eternal, and yet we're not yet with Him in heaven. So we still deal with our fleshly desires and our sinful nature. And so we're not quite all the way into one room. We're not quite all the way perfect. And we're still not the same as we were before. So that's what it means to live in this liminal state that we're in as Christians still on earth. And so, yeah, that's why I love that concept. I love that name and that word. So that's why I wanted to name the blog that and the podcast that. And if I ever have a band, that's what it's going to be called too.
That's good.
So we'll see. So I also wanted to give you an opportunity to share about a funeral that you went to today. Did you want to?
Sure. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful funeral. I had gotten to know this lady in a Bible study I'm a part of. I'm in a part of community Bible study. And this very sweet lady came and joined our group and was eventually called to be a teacher within a homeschooling group, a co-op called Classical Conversations. And we have a bunch of friends who have done that over the years. And it seems to be a very supportive and tightly knit group. And so this lady was expecting, I want to say, maybe her sixth child, or I could have gotten that number wrong. And everything seemed very healthy with the baby, and she went into normal labor, and there were complications. And in the end, the baby lasted 2 days and then passed away in the hospital. And so a friend of mine and I, we went to go and see her in the hospital and took her flowers, and it was a very traumatic time for the family.
Yeah.
And so today I did go to the funeral for the baby, and it was neat to see the community come together and very tenderly support this beautiful family. And I thought the pastor who spoke, you know, did a really good job of trying to acknowledge the sovereignty of God and yet very tenderly helping us to see that there are so many mysteries in life that we will never understand, mm-hmm. and bring so much pain.
Yeah.
So it was very balanced, and my heart goes out to this family. And, you know, it's just one of those things that it's going to take several days to process. And
yeah, I'm sure.
And anyway, the main thing I think for the rest of us is just that we're remembering to pray for them, that whenever they come to our mind, to just pray for them. And to, I know she's got friends and family who are supporting her, and just that the love of God would just draw her very near, and that whole family, and bring them the peace that only He can bring. So it was very moving, and it was very truthful and honest, but you know, it's hard. It was very hard.
Well, I mean, I remember telling, you know, a few weeks ago in church, I was telling the story of how when Jane was first born, we took her, got her home her first night home from the hospital when she was born, and went up into her room, and she's vomited blood all over the sheets. And we call 911 and we're all freaking out, and ambulance comes and we ride with her to the hospital. And I just remember thinking in the ambulance, I know that I've got to be willing to give her over to the Lord and say, I trust you, God, with this. But gosh, that's hard. And especially, I mean, that was where we didn't know, but I can't imagine being in the place where, you know, we have a good story. We have a happy ending as far as that goes, but having to lose the baby, just can't imagine the type of pain and yet knowing that God is with them and he's with us in the moment of difficulty and trial. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the temptation for me, and I think it's just because I've never been in this family's shoes before, but I think the temptation for me is to say, I don't think I could make it through that.
Right.
I don't think I could handle that. Mm-hmm. And I think what's wrong with that belief system is it's absent of God.
Yeah.
It's saying, it's one thing to acknowledge that we don't want to go through that. Mm-hmm. And who wants to go through something like that?
But right.
The temptation is to say, I can't go through that. But it's a picture of life, mm-hmm. and of suffering totally void of Christ. And as a Christian, we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
So it's a very scary place to go in my mind.
Yeah.
I can't go there because it's going to a place that God never wants me to go.
And he hasn't called you to be there right now. I really think that when there's people who go through something that difficult, God gives them grace to walk through that. And when you're not having to go through that, you don't have the grace to walk through that at that moment because he hasn't called you to walk through that. So going down that road is a kind
it's
of a dangerous
walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a dangerous place because, you know, you're not being asked to walk down that road. Now, if you do go down that road and say, all right, what if that did happen? And you said, well, if that did happen, then I know that the Lord would be with me and he would guide me. Then that's not as detrimental as saying, going in that mind place of saying, well, what would that be like? That would just be awful. I could never survive that. And mm-hmm. it's kind of a godless future, which is, I think I've heard, is the definition of fear, is a future without God. Or imagining a future without God. So I'm glad you went to that funeral. I didn't get to go.
Yeah, it was great. There were a bunch of women there who I knew from different Christian communities, whether it's other churches or other ministries or just, you know, other women who were there to support each other. And so, you know, it was sweet to see the community wrapping its arms around the family. And I just grateful in a small way to share in their sufferings.
Yeah. Cool. So that's what's going on this week. A lot. It has been a busy week.
It's been kind of crazy.
So I even, you know, I worked a couple days construction. I'm a bivocational pastor, so I do at least 2, sometimes 3 days of construction. So I did 2 days this week and built a deck the other day that was kind of fun. It had pyramid stairs.
It's beautiful.
And so I posted a picture on Facebook. It kind of looked like an Escher painting. It kind of looked like Qbert, that old video game. And so it was fun. That was not the normal thing that we do, but that was fun to do. I enjoy building that stuff and getting that put together and seeing people happy when they have their deck and they get their grill out there and all that stuff. So that's a lot of fun. So we're going to move on from there. What's going on? I wanted to talk a little bit about our story of how we met, continuing that story, but revolving around the comment. So we're going to talk about that in just a second. The cord runs up. Okay, so here is a pivotal moment in our relationship, I would say. Would you say it's pivotal?
It is. I think you. It meant more to you than it did, you know, to me. But it's funny and it's, you know, awkward and ridiculous and. But I think it had a huge impact on you.
Well, it certainly did. That's for sure. It had an impact on you too, but by through me.
Yes.
So after we met, we share our story how we met last time, which is at the Grace House at that Ivy party. And your friends told you that I didn't look like a Christian. Shortly after that, we emailed a couple times, right? And then
those details are vague.
We played tennis once, and at least once, maybe another time. And then it was fairly early in the school year at Mary Wash. And there was one day I remember I was walking up campus walk, and you were actually talking to my good friend Pete, standing there right in front of the underground in front of Lee Hall. And it was a beautiful day. It was just a gorgeous day. And so you guys were standing there talking. And so I walked up and started talking. And I think Pete had to move on. And so I said, no, you said it. You said you were going to go for a walk. And you said, would you like to come along? And so we started walking. And then what happened after that?
I don't remember what happened. I just...
I remember it like it was yesterday.
You remember... All I know is that... Hey, I don't know if I got distracted talking to someone. Anyway, it was...
Oh, no, I remember.
It was the main campus walkway. So there's all these people, you know, walking up and down either to their dorms or to their classes. And people mill around and talk if they're not going to classes or whatever. But... All I remember is that it seemed that as we were walking and stopping and talking, you know, everyone was a girl that you talked to. Now, granted, we were at a college that was heavy on the girl side, and, you know, the percentage of boys was not nearly as heavy. But nonetheless, there were still plenty of guys there that Brian could have talked to, and they all seemed to be girls. And it just seemed that he knew every single girl. And so it began to feel awkward for me. I'm walking down, you know, this campus walkway with this guy who seems to know every single girl. And I thought, this is really weird. I actually was a little uncomfortable because I was a freshman. And I thought, am I being taken advantage of here? Maybe I should head back to my dorm. It was just kind of strange. So...
I'll say before that. So okay. There's one particular girl that I stopped and spoke to because it was the year before my that. So when we met, I was a sophomore. You were a freshman, and my freshman year, I was a cheerleader for the basketball team. We cheered for girls and guys. There were seven guys and seven girls on the squad, and it was actually I started cheerleading because a cute girl asked me to. And then ended up about half the squad were Christians, and one of my best friends was on the squad with us, and so there was a lot of good things that came out of that. It was certainly not wholly in my desires, but the girl that I stopped to speak to was a girl from the basketball team. I don't remember her name at all, but she was one of the few that I had actually kind of shared the gospel with at the year before. So it was actually kind of. I felt very self-righteous in that this wasn't just a flirting moment, that this was a girl that I had shared the gospel with. At least in my mind, that's kind of how I justified it. But so as I'm talking to this girl, Rebecca had waited before, but as I'm starting to talk to this girl, all of a sudden Rebecca just starts walking away. Like she was standing there, and then she just started walking away. So I was like, all right, I'll catch you later. I'm going on a walk with this girl. And so I catch up to her and I say, what's up? Where are you going? And then that's when you said the comment.
Well, since you're so keen to share the comment, you go ahead and you just go ahead and say it.
I remember it like it was yesterday. Like I said, you said, you know what? You talk to too many people, especially girls. That sounds very innocuous, doesn't it?
Well, I couldn't, I was floored. And I just thought, you know, this is ridiculous. So I was like, I think our walk needs to go ahead and end.
I was ridiculous.
And so, yeah, I did think you talked to too many girls. I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And but see, I have four brothers, and they were more shy, and they were just more private, and you were not shy. And so I think it was different for me, you know, to see that and interact with all of that. And I had just always guarded my heart, and so I just didn't know what this was all about. And so I definitely was okay with speaking my mind at that point. So, yes, I said what has now been epitomized as the comment.
Yep.
That was my comment.
Which is, what's funny about that is we actually then went on a several mile walk after that. And we talked about it. You know, we had this long conversation about it. And I remember it being a nice walk. I don't remember much of anything else about the walk. But I remember coming back to my room and talking to my roommate, Nate. And I was like, you would not believe what this freshman girl said to me.
Which...
I even called my mom and said
what your roommate said later, which we didn't find out till later. He said, well, of course she was right.
was
which
true.
I was.
Yes, actually, he was very honest, as you were. He was a great guy. Good old Nate. Anyway, so I came back and I told him and I told my mom. I told this guy, Mike, who was discipling me, just... I was just appalled at the audacity of this freshman girl. Like, who does she know who she's talking to? I mean, this is Brian Holt that she's talking to. This is
apparently
like,
I didn't.
Yeah, you clearly. So for the next 6 months, I talked to one less girl.
Me, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, no, I probably added another one or two.
Yeah, you dropped one and you just added a bunch. Make you feel better or something.
Oh,
I
man.
Don't know.
Well, we can talk about the rest next time. But that was the comment. That was what started it all.
That's right.
That, you know.
Well, we both had some growing to do, so God had a plan, and It was probably good that we were apart that
the next
first
6 months
year.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's funny. There's more to the story. We'll talk about that next time. So that's the comment story. That's a big deal in our relationship. I don't know that our kids know all about the comment, but I know we've talked about it once or twice. I don't know if they would notice it. I don't know if they would recognize it or be able to tell a story again. We'll have to get them on here one time and talk about it. All right. So that's the comment story. That's the continuing saga of our relationship. We'll get into more of that next time. We're going to come right back and talk about some topics. It's a muggy night in Houston, and all the intersections are like full-serve stations, and I'm on my way. Familiar place. It's cold in Kansas City. Okay, so today has been an interesting day for me. I'm a member of a Facebook group called the Reformed Pub. It's based out of a another podcast, which is kind of not the only drive or whatever for starting this podcast, but certainly one of the podcasts I listen to on a regular basis. And they're great guys. They talk about theology and they talk about beer, which are two things that I enjoy and enjoy talking about, enjoy hearing about people talk about. But they have a Facebook group where people who are just members, there's several thousand people on there, and you can just post a question and start a topic and a thread just to talk about anything. And today, somebody posted an interesting conversation, an interesting topic for thought that was, I thought, was very thought-provoking because it's something that's happening now in our day. I mean, there's basically, he said, what would you do if your child's teacher from last year, who was Mr. Thomas, came back this year and is now Miss Thomas. And so your children are being instructed to call them by this new name because they've had a gender identity change. And this, I forget what city and state this is happening in, but this is actually something that happened and is going on right now. And so he posed that question, and the first several responses were, well, you know, I would have big problems because my wife would have some explaining to do because we homeschool our kids. And it was pretty much mostly that kind of feel of, well, of course, this is why all Christians homeschool their kids. Now, nobody said that specifically, but the feeling I get is well, of course, this is why you don't send your kids to the government school. And somebody was talking about how the government runs the school and you don't want to be training your kids from the government. So I don't normally like to argue, but this one kind of reeled me in a little bit, and I got a little, I just get frustrated mostly because, I have a long background, a history in homeschooling and in the church, and I've seen a lot take place in our experience, both as kids growing up and then also as parents in dealing with how to educate your children. And do you follow the cultural norms of the world, or do you follow the cultural norms of the church? And so that was just something that I got drawn into a little bit, and I wanted to talk about a little bit because we have decided to send our kids to public school. Up until this year, we actually are sending our daughter to, well, not sending her, we're keeping her home and homeschooling her. So I wanted to get some of your thoughts, Rebecca, on the process to decide to send the kids to public school, and also to pull Chloe out of school, send her to homeschool. But first of all, what's your experience with homeschool and public school?
Well, those are loaded questions, and how long do we have?
Yeah. Well, the clock's ticking.
Well, I was homeschooled for different periods of my life when I was in Colorado and in Virginia, and then I ended up graduating from a public high school, and I think I mentioned that on the last podcast. And neither of them was easy. Growing up is hard either way. There are times when we're just very confused, and when you're a teen, it can be very confusing whether you're in public school or homeschooled. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's part of growing up.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's this, package that delivers everything that we want, per se, to be safe and to control everything. It's just not possible, because then there is no room for Jesus. But my experience with both was also good, because looking back, I can see how the Lord was teaching me different things in those different seasons. And so I can acknowledge very gratefully the Lord's hand in both of those times. I learned different things and for different academic things, different social things. I mean, the Lord was just sanctifying me and growing me. And so I'm grateful for that. And as I became a mom.
Wait, first of all, if I could just clarify. Yes. So how long were you homeschooled? What grades?
I need to even ask my mom. One of the years was broken up for a move. So the ones I can remember the most are two elementary grade years, and then that I was homeschooled, and then 2 years in middle school and then high school. So probably combined, maybe 5 years of being homeschooled, maybe more. I need to ask my mom more specifically.
So 5 years of homeschool, mm-hmm. and then what? That makes 7 years of public school. So a little less than half you were homeschooled, but at different times, right? So
that's right.
There were periods in each grade, except for all of high school was public.
No, not all of high school. It was 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Was public.
It was public.
Okay. So that's Rebecca's experience or you know, track record or whatever, history with homeschooling in her own life. Mine, I went to public elementary school, and I actually, this was like when the homeschooling thing was first starting, was when I was a kid. I mean, this is early 80s. I think that's kind of when the homeschooling movement really took off, if I'm not mistaken. And we, you know, we were homeschooled from fourth grade to sixth grade. And then for seventh grade, I begged my parents to send me to public school. So I went to public school for seventh grade. And then from eighth through 12th, I was actually at a private Catholic high school. And I graduated from a Catholic high school. So I have run the gambit of schooling experiences in my own life as well. So that's where we're coming from. So as we have this discussion, I just wanted to say that we're people who've experienced both homeschooling, and we're people who have experienced public school. And I've also experienced a private Catholic education. So we're not coming from an ignorant position on it. And both of our parents had very strong convictions about homeschooling when we were homeschooled. So it's not, and also neither one of us really rebelled against our homeschooling. It's not as though that we're kind of kicking against the goat of homeschooling for the sake of it. It's just something that as we've learned, as we've lived our lives, both in our own lives and then also in the church context that we've been in, our convictions about education seem to be a little bit different than a lot of the people that we run across. Some are similar, some are different. Just seems like some of the circles that you run in really kind of dictate what your views are on that. So,
yeah, most of our friends homeschool, and we have a few friends who send their kids to public school, and so many of these people are wonderful people,
mm-hmm.
and we enjoy them for who they are, whether or not they homeschool or send their kids to public school.
Right.
I think what we are reacting to is words and tones and a feeling and even just outright comments that are not biblical and tear down the church rather than build up the church.
Yeah.
I've noticed that homeschooling parents can be at odds in their approach to education and to life. They can be at odds with those who send their kids to public school. And those who send their kids to public school can look down on and be opposed to those who homeschool. So rather than the church exalting Christ and elevating the grace that's available for each one of us,
mm-hmm.
you know, we make each other feel low. And so yeah. that has always bothered me in for so many reasons.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, what we're responding to.
So what are some of the feelings that you've felt as we've... Because when we sent our kids... We were at a church where I was an intern, and we were, as far as we know, we were the only ones who decided to send our kids to public school. And the church at that point, they would admit this, they were coming out of a season where it was heavily pushed that you should homeschool your children. And they had kind of turned away from that and said that was a practice that was elevated to the height of principle. But still some of those undercurrents remain. So were there any experiences that you had that kind of made you feel second rate for sending kids to public school?
Well, I have to be really grateful for the Lord and how he just sustained me and has really spoken to me personally about what to do with our children and as you and I have prayed together as a couple. So while some people might feel very pressured to cave or to follow a particular trend, I have never felt like I needed to do that. I have always, just by God's grace, felt compelled to come before the Lord every year and just ask Him what we're supposed to do. And I was really desperate each time to hear from the Lord, because it, in my heart, it matters what happens to our children. It matters in the sense that I know and I believe that God knows what's best for them.
Yeah.
And He knows what they need to experience. He knows what they need to see and mm-hmm. how they need to be tested and how they need to be protected. I mean, He knows all of that.
Yep.
And because He knows that, and while I love my child very, very much, I cannot know those things like mm-hmm. He does.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to hear from the Lord what we were supposed to do. So that mattered to me actually more than what happened in the church
yeah.
or what I felt from other people. So what I felt from other people was definitely there, but it did not impact me maybe the way that it could have had I not been leaning on the Lord like I was.
Right.
So at church, there was I was immersed in a homeschooling community, and I didn't talk very much about my passion to see our family reaching out to the lost. I didn't talk very much about the respect I had for the teachers, who were amazing teachers the public school.
And a lot of them were believers.
A lot of them were believers and are believers.
Still are, yeah.
You know, they have, some of them have their masters, and some of them are creating classrooms and programs from scratch that they are now going and teaching at seminars here in little old Powhatan in a small rural community. So, you know, I didn't talk about any of that, so it was lonely.
Yeah.
It was lonely, and it was sad at times because I just felt out of the loop, and I didn't really feel that I felt like I was on a different page when it came not only to education but to life. Because I remember thinking, if this is the approach to life, then I may be on a different page on other issues as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it seems to be a whole mindset that I've noticed that. The almost, and not, I think for our old church, I think came out of this. So I'm not saying that it's still like that, but like some of the comments that I experienced today was very much like, well, if you love your children, then you would do this. Like this is the obvious choice for people who love their children. Therefore, if you don't love your children, you'll send them to public school. So if you send your kids to public school, you don't love your kids and you don't follow the word. Whereas I have never heard an exegetical argument for sending your kids to public school. And for homeschool rather. And if I ever did, I would not believe it, because there was no such thing as public school or private school or homeschool. I mean, like the whole idea of education as a, you know, formal thing is just, it's within the recent 200 years. So to say a biblical position that you can't send your kids to public school, I think is ridiculous to have some type of, yeah. So anyway, I don't want to get too much into that, but what I've noticed is there is a, from the people who are very hard-nosed about this, and I know that we have lots of people that we know who aren't hard-nosed about this, so if they're listening to this, I want them to know that we don't lump them in with this, but the people who I've noticed who are hard-nosed, who are really pushing us, are mostly, and this is what really gets me, they're mostly coming from what I would call a fear-mongering platform, where it's like, you don't want to send your kids to public schools, that's run by the government, that's run by the godless you know, Democrats and their you know, the godless, you know, liberal mindset, and they're going to be indoctrinating your children, and then all of a sudden your children are going to, you know, believe in all these things that aren't true. Well, you know what? I'm not afraid of the public school. I'm not afraid of those because we know people who teach, because we've gone into the public schools. We've met the people. We care for them. They know that we love them. You know, there's a number of pastors who send their kids to Powhatan public schools, and they're doing great, and they're investing in the schools. And yeah, it just, I sometimes think it's so easy to put something down when you take the human face off of it and make it about an ideology, and just say, well, all public schools are bad. I know there's a lot of bad public schools. There's a lot of evil in public school. There's a lot of sin in public school. But you know what? There's a lot of sin in my child's heart. And I don't have to go looking for that. He doesn't have to go looking for sin. It's not going to rub off on him in the public school. It's already in his heart. And so I'm not afraid that he's going to have sin in his heart or somehow catch this contagious disease of sin. It just actually has become more evident. I think it's almost easier to deal with in some respects, not easier, but you know, I don't know. I know I get on a rant on this, but.
Well, I think the tragic thing behind it is that it has replaced the truth of the gospel, because power to live a victorious Christian life is not in what we do or what we say or whether or not we homeschool or don't. The power of the gospel is in the cross of Christ.
Yes.
And Christ within us, mm-hmm. that he is our hope of glory. And so when my child succeeds in homeschool and learns things and grows as a person, that's Christ in her, the hope of glory. If my child succeeds and grows in public school, it's because of Christ in him, the hope of glory. So it's the reality of the gospel that makes the difference, of Christ ruling in their hearts and them responding to the Holy Spirit as he leads them throughout the day. And, you know, I remember sharing, I don't know, a long time ago, about coming out of homeschooling and going back into public school. And I remember my heart welling up with compassion for the people around me, because I knew that what they were doing was wrong. People all around me. And I had no interest in doing what they did. And I just remember thinking the darkness that these people are living in.
Yeah.
And I have the light of Christ within me.
Yes.
And that's not anything that I did.
Right.
That's Christ in me. And it wasn't the result of homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
It was the result of the power of God making me his child and causing me to walk with him in a way where I understood light and darkness and sin and hope and, you know, the place that these kids are at and the place that kids are at, you know, now, even at the elementary level. It's it grieves our hearts, but at the same time, you know, our kids are reaching out to those people and they themselves are growing.
Yeah.
You know, they're understanding that they're weak and that they need the Lord. And so, you know, I think that's my biggest issue, is that it has the tendency for such a fervor to grow within the hearts of these homeschooling parents that it actually replaces the gospel.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people that I've talked to from our previous church, you know, they had homeschooled their children from, infancy all the way through high school, and there were kids, there were drug dealers. I mean, not just drug users. There were plenty of drug users, but drug dealers in the church. There were teenage pregnancies. There was rebellion. There was all kinds of, and there was Pharisees, you know, kids who were just self-righteous. And they had been homeschooled for their whole lives. And it didn't, and talking to these parents, them saying, we did this because we thought it would keep them from those things. Or we did this because we thought it would save them. And they've just...
Or they just thought that they were doing the right thing.
Right, yeah. I mean, but some of the ones that I talked to was just like, we're so confused now because our children rebelled and our children aren't Christians or they're not walking with the Lord. They're not doing these things in a godly way. But yet we did all the things that they told us to do. We homeschooled and we sheltered them and they weren't allowed to date. And they, you know, that's a whole other topic. But so anyway, I think about that, and especially today as I was having that conversation, just going, oh man, I feel for people who put all their trust in homeschooling, or people who put all their trust in public school, or people who, anything that people are putting their trust in, except for Jesus Christ, is going to fail them. And so it just seems to me, so often around this whole debate, that's what a lot of people do. I'm not going to say everybody, but that's what a lot of people seem like they're doing, is putting their hope in a system or putting their hope in a practice that will somehow achieve a result that is, you know, saving their children. And I just, that didn't bear out in my life. It hasn't borne out in most of the lives of the kids that I watched grow up. And I was in and out. We were the odd ones out in the church I grew up in. We were, you know, private school kids. And so, but yeah, I don't know that. So what's our, I thought we should end this on a topic. What's our process with each kid that we go through? Because we don't have a bias one way or another.
No.
We're not advocating for sending kids to public school. We're advocating for trusting the Lord in your decision. So what do we do with our kids?
Well, it happens every January, February, I start to feel anxious about the next year. And
by anxious, what do you mean?
Well, I realize that while I'm still in the middle of the current school year, I am thinking already about the next year, what we're going to do. And I never assume that I know what is best for my child and this is what we're going to do. I don't. I always put it before the Lord. What are we supposed to do? What is best for each one of our children? And there's the tendency, at least in my part, to not want to separate the children and put one in public school and homeschool the other. But I also recognize that the Lord, again, knows what's best. And so I've always prayed and just asked the Lord. So when Micah, our oldest, was going to school, he was school age, he never liked to sit down at a table and just write or color or do anything. So me doing preschool with him in the house was just not even possible. He's not that kind of a learner. And so his learning was more just doing things with you, mm-hmm. you know, or helping me around the house. And it was not a sit down, let's talk about our ABCs, just not at all. Right. So I began to pray, what are we supposed to do? And we moved down here from Fredericksburg to Powhatan in the spring before he was going to start school. So it was very much on my mind. And even though I had heard good things about the Powhatan school systems, your mom had taught as a music teacher in the Powhatan school system, I just didn't know what to do.
Right.
And the Lord used an instrumental book in my life, and I've talked about it before, and I will forever talk about this book. But my hero growing up, and he's still one of my heroes, is the runner, Eric Little. And there's a biography about him that I just really enjoy. And I had read the biography several times before, and I felt led to read it again. So I reread it, and what hit me this time, and it had never hit me the previous times I had read the book, was his mom, Mary, what had happened with her while he was growing up. His parents were missionaries to China, and they were part of the London Missionary Society, and children of missionary parents in the London Missionary Society were often sent back to England to be schooled. And so the book goes into great detail about what Mary went through. And the author does not depict these parents as anything other than gospel preaching, Christ exalting, faith. You know, he doesn't describe them as any other way than the very kinds of people that we would want to be ourselves.
Yes.
And yet, Mary traveled with Eric and his older brother back to England. She stayed there a year because she couldn't bear the thought of leaving them so suddenly. And so she rented out a room and she stayed with them while her husband was back in China, still ministering.
Yeah.
And then she had the difficult task of leaving the two boys in England at the boarding school for the London Missionary Society kids. And then she sailed back to China. And Eric's interaction with his mom was very limited over the next 20 years. And when I got to the end of the story and I read about how Eric passed away in the concentration camp, I realized after reading this man's life that he was not the sum total of what his mom did or did not do.
Yeah.
That this man's life was the result of God working in him, giving him Christian parents, giving him a godly education, whether his parents were there or not. The godly education actually was very rigorous, for sure, academically, but Eric didn't even perform very, very well academically in the early years. And he had tons of sports.
Yeah.
Tons of sports. I even hear a lot of homeschooling parents who are anti-sports, you know. This boy had so many sports, and it kept him and his brother out of mischief, and it kept them busy and healthy. And in the end, he ended up being a missionary himself. And he gave up so much. He'd had very little time with his wife and his three daughters. And anyway, this man's life is just, to me, such a picture of what it means to... for the Lord to get a hold of someone and for them to live worthy of the gospel.
Yeah.
And it had so little to do with his mother.
Yeah.
And I remember being put in my place as I read this book, and I thought, Lord, you know, Micah belongs to you. He doesn't belong to me. Because in the end, when he's lived his life, while, yes, I brought him into the world, and yes, I have a unique role in his life, I'm not the one that needs to be the shining star in his life. And neither does it need to be where he went to school. What needs to be preeminent in his life is his love for Christ and how he lives and what he believes in. Now, granted, all of that is shaped, of course, by education.
Right.
But that's not the sole influence.
Yeah.
It's all the things I've just mentioned. So I just remember getting on my knees after I read the very last page of that biography, and I just wept. And I cried for a long time because I knew that the Lord was giving me faith for this next school year that Micah was supposed to be in public school. And it did not give me permission to step out of his life and just hand everything over to the public school. That is not what it meant.
Right.
It was just sort of my marching orders for the next year. And I very much believe in a mom being present and active and in discipline and instruction and all of those things which a mother must do.
Yeah.
Particularly in those early years. So, you know, I was not relinquishing my control over to the school system. I was extremely active in my children's lives. What I was doing was acknowledging that God loves Micah more than I do. And I was choosing to believe that God had a plan for Micah. Mm-hmm. And I needed to trust him.
Yeah. And that's what we do with every kid every year, pretty much. We start praying and trying to decide and discern what God wants. You know, we're fairly confident that God's probably not going to call us to jerk him in and out of school for, you know, three or four times. But we want to be open to at least say, like we do with Chloe this year, are you calling us to bring her home? There were some things that we saw that, you know, she was being a little bit influenced by the world, and she was just had some attitudes that we really were concerned about and the way that she responded to us. And so we were like, okay, should this be that we bring her home? And then we prayed about it a lot. And, you know, you had a sense of peace and you started getting excited about curriculum and, yeah, so we felt like that was the move for our family to make, and we want to be open with that, to that, for any of our children at any point. I've been really, it's been neat to see God work and reveal his will to us, and, you know, at least as best we can. I'm not saying that we hear directly from the Lord, but we pray about things, and the more we pray about something, if our heart is peaceful and we trust the Lord and we feel like we have faith to do something, we feel like that's where we're being led. So it's not like we get these messages from God. So when we say we feel like the Lord was leading us in this area, that's what we mean. We prayed about something, we either had peace about it, the more we prayed, or the more we prayed, we just felt like that wasn't the right decision. And we were trusting that the Lord was speaking to us through his Spirit and through his Word and through counsel and through all those things.
Some of it is just practical. I mean, I think most moms would probably, you know, understand this approach as well. You know, we were finding that Mike and Nathan, our two boys, were handling the school schedule fairly well. Mm-hmm. And Chloe, our daughter, was just struggling practically. She was exhausted in the morning. And she would get up and she would actually get herself dressed and she would take care of all of the details of getting herself out the door, even helping to make her lunch, and was wanting to help make the oatmeal in the morning. So she was very much there and ready. But at the end of the day, she was just falling apart. Yeah. And I just thought, you know, she's 7 years old. And the boys were not struggling this way. Mm-hmm. And there might be other girls out there who are 7 years old and they don't struggle like that. But Chloe was. And, you know, we have chosen to let our kids play sports. It does great things for our boys. They need it. Otherwise, they'll be climbing the walls. And so we were out a couple nights, you know, evenings during the week. And that was just compounding the issue for Chloe. And so some of my approach too was just, you know, Lord, maybe she just needs more sleep.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing super spiritual about that. It's very practical. And I think, you know, if she's able to just be more leisure about her day and help me with other things, and she doesn't have to maybe rush as much as the boys, that it'll just give her more time to grow up and
yeah,
you know, handle or approach life differently. Yeah, so
definitely. And I think, I mean, I just wanted to say also that we expect the kids to learn how to do math and write and read at school. And home is where we teach them about the Lord and how to discern what they're learning at school and what they're hearing from the world, whether it's through TV, whether it's through school, whether it's through friends, whether it's through sports, all the messages that are coming from the world. We're at home teaching them how to discern those and how to understand them biblically. And I just want to say, you do such a wonderful job at teaching our kids biblical truth. I mean, there are so many times where people have come to me and said, you know, I was teaching the Sunday school class or whatever class they were in, and you know, your kids knew all the answers. They knew all the Bible stories, and they knew all the answers. And you know, it's not like that's going to save them, but that just shows that they're learning things at home about the Lord. They're not learning that at school. I actually even had one lady come up to me somewhere. I think it was at Chick-fil-A, and said, "You homeschool your children, don't you? They're so well behaved." And I said, "No, they go to public school."
I remember that story.
I just think that you do such a wonderful job of that, Rebecca. A wonderful mom, and you're a great example of godly motherhood and godly what a godly wife is. So I'm so grateful for that.
Well, I'm thankful for grace.
Yeah. So that's probably enough of topics even. I mean, we're hitting an hour right now. So we were going to talk about an article that a friend of ours wrote, but we can save that for next time, about being a pastor's wife.
Yeah, we probably should give that some time.
So real quick, I thought to end up, I have a surprise, and I told you what the surprise was very briefly. But here it is. A little bit of NFL trivia.
All right.
Are you ready for this?
Okay.
All right. We have a short time period. Who was the first player in history to earn 5 Super Bowl rings? Joe Montana, Reggie White, Jerry Rice, Charles Haley.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Who was the first player in history to earn 5 Super Bowl rings? Joe Montana, Reggie White, Jerry Rice, Charles Haley.
Oh gosh, I don't know.
Take a guess.
I don't know. That sounds terrible, but I'm going to
say Charles Haley because I've never heard of him. Booyah! I was right.
Oh, Charles Haley.
The first combined NFL-AFL draft occurred in the 1960s. Who was the first overall draft pick in this inaugural draft? Wow. The very first draft, from the very first draft pick. Bob Greasy, Bubba Smith, Steve Spurrier, Willie Ellison.
Oh, wow. Those are names I haven't heard in so long. Well, Steve Spurrier. Wow.
Is that your guess, Steve Spurrier?
No, I haven't.
This thing gives you a time limit, and the time is already out.
You go ahead.
What is it?
I don't know.
What's your guess?
I don't know.
I'm going to guess Bubba Smith. Boom.
And you get it right again?
Pretty sure. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Which team had the first quarterback in NFL history that threw for over 1,000 yards in a season?
Oh, gosh.
Detroit Lions, Boston Redskins, Green Bay Packers, Chicago Bears.
Honey, you're asking me stuff I don't know.
Come on, you're the NFL girl. I'm going to say Green Bay Packers. You ready?
Go ahead.
Apparently, I got that right.
Did you get it right again?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, my gosh.
10 seasons as a head coach with the same team is a milestone for NFL coaches. Which of the following was a head coach of the same team for more than 10 seasons? George Allen, Bill Cowher, Don Cariel, or Tim Flores?
Honey, I have no idea. You're asking me things I just don't know.
I think I got that right, too. I don't know. Maybe I'm just... Okay, maybe I'm just really good at this.
See, you need to be asking yourself, not me.
NFL football. I said Bill Cowher, and pretty sure I got that right. NFL football and Thanksgiving Day has been a cohesive day in time. There were from 2 to 6 games played on Thanksgiving Day in the past, until which season schedule changed it to only one game per year? 1939, 58, 47, or 70?
I think it was in the 40s. I don't know.
All right, we'll go 47.
It's probably not.
Oh, 1939. My first one wrong.
That's because I influenced you.
Oh, man. All right, so this is the last one.
All right.
The 1966 season saw the first NFL team score 70 points in a regular season game. Ooh. Which team embarrassed the New York Giants 72-41? The Washington Redskins, the Green Bay Packers, Dallas Cowboys, or Kansas City Chiefs?
I'll pick Micah's team, only because...
You think it's the Packers, huh?
I'm just going to say it. But I don't know.
Oh, Washington Redskins.
Redskins. Oh, wow.
Boom. You blew it big time. Two in a row. We'll do some more of those later. That was kind of fun. We got to find a good trivia game that you can get some right. I found.
It's fine.
I got to see if there's a Broncos trivia game. I'll look for that.
Don't ask me that either. That's where my brothers would do really well in, not me.
Let's get anything else you want to close the show out with?
No. No.
All right.
Be on.
Yeah, it's been fun. I didn't expect the homeschooling topic to go on that long, but you know, maybe it needed to. I'm sure there's more that could be said. There's more things that I'd like to say, but you know, it is what it is. If you have thoughts about any of the things that we talk about, feel free to comment. If you go to thisliminalstate.com, you can find the episode page. It's usually the first one up there. Open that up, and there's the possibility to comment below. So leave comments. Let us know what you think. Give us your thoughts. Tell us you think we're idiots and we don't know what we're talking about. Or actually just give us suggestions on things you'd like for us to talk about, discuss, or whatnot. So that's it. thisliminalstate.com. You can also email us at beckandbry@aol.com or you can give us a phone call if you know our number.
Someone actually laughed at me the other day because we have an AOL account.
That's
true. I realize it's really outdated. We just have never changed it.
We're old school.
That's okay.
We're like hipsters.
Right.
We're like cool for being, you know, old school. Anyway, all right. Well, thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. This has been a great time of discussion, and I really hope the Lord blesses you. And yeah. Like I said, give us feedback, let us know what you think, and we will see you next time.